Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on Nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at LexusofLexington.com. Did you know that half of America is single? Hollywood has never produced anything like this before. The Dating Project, a groundbreaking documentary that follows five single people, ages 18 to 40, as they search for authentic and meaningful relationships. There is no script. There are no actors. These are real people trying to find love and happiness in an age of swiping left or right. From Empower Pictures, Paulus Productions, Family Theater Productions, and PureFlix, you can now own The Dating Project. Save the date by visiting thedatingprojectmovie.com and go a step further and help others in your circle date differently by partnering with Ascension Press. Visit shop.ascensionpress.com to acquire the companion study guide. The Dating Project Movie is now available on DVD and digital download on Amazon, iTunes, and Walmart. Please visit thedatingprojectmovie.com for details.
This is Setting the Record Straight with Chuck Coughlin. How you doing again?
And of course, this is Breadbox Media. Breadboxmedia.com.
Catholicism in communist China is disappearing. It's a long, sad story, but the resistance and faithfulness of Catholics in China, the many martyrs, are very inspiring. Those that know these stories and these tales of these martyrs and these poor persecuted Catholics need to tell them, and those of us who have not heard these stories yet need to listen to them and take them into your heart. When we think about how much the Catholic faith means to these people, you will certainly be inspired to greater faithfulness. And for people who are in other Christian churches, these stories will certainly inspire them too, to greater faithfulness to Christ. Cardinal Ignatius Kun Pinmei, said this: "If we renounce our faith, we will disappear, and there will not be a resurrection. If we are faithful, we will still disappear, but there will be a resurrection. Public security officers arrested and held for interrogation Bishop Ignatius Kun Pinmei on September 8, 1955. He was the most influential churchman still free in China, and one of the few Catholic bishops not already exiled or imprisoned. In simultaneous attacks through the darkened city, police raided local seminaries, churches, and even private dwellings. On that night alone, more than 300 Catholics, from the bishop to high school students, were handcuffed, thrown into police vans, and driven to increasingly overcrowded prisons. By the end of the month, 1,200 Shanghai Catholics had been incarcerated. Their crime, they were informed, was not that they were Catholics. After all, the Chinese Constitution had enshrined religious freedom as a basic right. No, they were being detained as counter-revolutionaries, hiding under the cloak of religion, a phrase used repeatedly in the press. The government called the prisoners counter-revolutionaries and militant Catholics, but the prisoners, they knew what their real offense was that neither they nor their bishop would renounce the Pope, the source of unity for the Catholic Church. These were the non-negotiable demands for membership in a universal, supranational, and indivisible church. They argued, if I today renounce the Pope, and then tomorrow I might be asked to deny the Lord himself. Most were given the choice. If they sign incriminating documents, they would be temporarily set free. If they did not, they would be punished for supporting the Kung Pin Mei traitorous counter-revolutionary clique and labeled as enemies of the state. Why was this tragic clash happening between the Chinese Communist Party, called the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, and the Shanghai Catholic Community? In their own words, two armies squared off in combat. On one side were dedicated communist scoundrels, committed to their vision of a socialist paradise and a newly resurgent China. A China that had proudly stood up against both internal enemies and foreign aggression. On the other side were equally patriotic and idealistic Chinese Catholics who resented the increasing infringement on their religious liberties. In the ensuing conflict, Catholics soon learned that the atheistic regime demanded a high price for being both Catholic and Chinese. Ultimately, many of these Shanghai Catholics were sent to labor camps, not to be released until 1979. When they returned to Shanghai, as broken old men and women. With the addition of recently declassified top-secret CCP documents, this tragic episode in modern Chinese history can finally be told. If we understand how the CCP dealt with the Shanghai Catholics in the 1950s, we will better understand the current predicament of the Catholic Church in China. This story does have a broader meaning. It helps to illumine the fate of other religious groups, both past and present, Tibetan Buddhists, Muslims, evangelical Christians, in a China that is the ascending power on the world stage and is treated with great deference by all countries, especially our own country, which never criticizes it. You don't see it in the press. Perhaps Bill Gertz in the Washington Times should get a Pulitzer Prize for his coverage of the negative aspects of using their trade surplus with the United States to build the world's largest navy, a nuclear navy, the world's largest air force. It's not there yet, but in a short time it will be. A buildup of that magnitude can only have as its object competition with only one country, the United States of America. But we distract ourselves and are asleep otherwise. There was a long civil war in China, ended in 1949, and the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, won, and its first order of business was to consolidate power. But the CCP did not simply aim to consolidate power. They wanted to form subjects, loyal to the state alone. First of all, they did subjugate any groups that stood in their way. One such group was the Catholic Church, which they labeled counter-revolutionary. A direct assault on the church could wait while the CCP confronted what it perceived as far greater threats. First, it had to break the power of armed resistance from bandits, maybe 400,000 of them, secret societies, ethnic and religious groups, and former nationalist army units. By mid-1951, Mao was successful, except for some pockets of Uyghur secessionists, Tibetan insurgents, who continued to fight on. Most armed resistance was effectively crushed. The CCP then concentrated on subjugating enemies without cause. Citizens quickly learned that the new regime meant business. Prostitutes, pickpockets, and opium addicts were rounded up and sent to reform camps. There were other groups to contend with as well. Democratic parties, intellectuals, workers, small businessmen. In Shanghai, resistance to the CCP was largely passive, disorganized. Here and there, where there were sporadic labor unrest and protests over the closing of movie theaters. But why did the CCP consider the Shanghai Catholic community its enemy? After all, some of the city's most outstanding citizens were Catholics. The answer seems to be, when the CCP dealt with the Catholic community, as with any non-communist group, it had two choices. The first choice was to remain tolerant of them, or even reconciled for the good of the country. The other choice was to hasten a communist utopia, even as it settled what it considered to be old scores. In dealing with the Catholic Church, the regime ultimately chose the latter option. There were two major reasons for this. One is that Marxists were atheists who wished to liberate compatriots from the idols of their own making. Karl Marx had said that religion is the opiate of the masses. Second is playing the nationalist card. The CCP knew that the growth of a Catholicism in China was a mixed legacy. It is true that Catholicism had ancient roots in Chinese soil, but Catholics had too often been protected by foreign powers in the past. For these reasons, they came to see the Roman Catholic Church as a reactionary organization, the source of counter-revolutionary activities in the midst of the people's democracies. In short, the Catholic Church was blocking progress and change. So what do you think the government did in developing a goal for what they wanted to do with the Catholic Church? There were two schools of thought among outside observers. One was that the Chinese Communist government just wanted to control the church. Other observers, the second school of thought, said that the Chinese Communists just wanted to destroy the church, thus surpassing the efforts of previous Chinese regimes. Whereas previous regimes might tolerate minority religions for a while, the communist regime itself exalted communism as a religion in its own right. Mao Zedong wanted to propagate his own religion, an anti-religion, atheism. How do we know what the regime really wanted? We have party documents that answer that question. By 1955, the CCP would admit that its goal was to destroy the church. Here's an official statement. When the political struggle and the forces of production have reached a high rate in the development of their forces, then it will become possible to destroy the Catholic Church. This is the objective we aim to reach, and it is for this that we struggle. Is that clear enough? Well, the goal of the Shanghai Catholics was also clear: to fight for survival, whatever the cost. In fact, as the Church became increasingly marginalized, it resorted to new methods that would help ensure its survival. The weapons of the weak. The Chinese Communist Party had 30 years of experience in war by other means, a war without weapons, a war using disinformation. It had proved itself capable of decisively infiltrating and cracking enemy organizations. It knew how to penetrate, how to divide them against themselves, and how to subjugate them. At the beginning of the conflict, the two sides were more evenly matched than one might imagine. Two questions. First, why would they fight with a mighty regime? Well, they fought for their survival. Individuals might bend to the regime to ensure their own personal survival. But for the church as a body to survive, the Catholics needed to remain unified. And that meant unified with the Pope. The second question is a little more interesting. How were the Shanghai Catholics able to resist encroaching communist power for so long? Other groups had failed. The CCP found that its every strategy was counteracted by a Catholic strategy of resistance.
At first, the Catholics operated above ground. Later, they went underground using the Chinese communists' own techniques they had used when they were.
I'd relate some of the specific names. I hope I don't mispronounce them. But I want to talk about some of the Catholic clergy who have been imprisoned there. Currently, every one of the approximately 25 underground bishops of the Roman Catholic Church is either in jail, under house arrest, or under strict surveillance or in hiding. Every one of the 25 underground bishops. Bishop Su Zemin, the underground bishop of Baoding, was arrested in 96, escaped, and rearrested in 97. There's been no news on this bishop for many years. Bishop Shi Engxiang, underground bishop of Yixian, was arrested in 2001. He's now more than 80 years old and has been detained for more than 10 years. We don't know his condition or his whereabouts. Bishop Gao Kexian, bishop of Yantai, was arrested in 99. We did not know where he was until he died in January of 2005. Cause of death unknown. Bishop Yanlai, the auxiliary bishop of the Diocese of Suwanji, was arrested in 2005, released and arrested again in 2006. He died in 2009. Bishop Zhao Zendong, bishop of Xuanhua,
was arrested in 2004. He died shortly after he was released. He was 87 years old. Bishop Han Dingxiang, Bishop of Yangyang, was arrested in 1999 and held in an unknown place for his last 2 years. He finally died in 2007 in a very suspicious situation. He was cremated and buried within 6 hours of his death without any religious ceremony. These are only a few, many, many examples. Priests, seminarians, nuns, and lay people face similar harassment and imprisonment, many of them in jail or in the slave labor camps. Now, the Cardinal Kung Foundation, which was founded to examine these matters and named in honor of Cardinal Ignatius Kung. Well, the Cardinal Kung Foundation got hold of a secret Chinese government document entitled The Procedures Legally to Implement the Eradication of Illegal Activities and Operations of the Underground Catholic Church. They published it. The document recommended steps to be taken to destroy the Underground Catholic Church. So the many promises on the surface are belied by what lays underneath. The communists have always been experts at disinformation, the artful and clever lie. The document outlined steps that included destroying the organization of the underground Catholic underground forces, cutting off foreign contacts with local illegal elements, and destroying the church's illegal assembly places. The New York Times referenced this document in an article, Catholics in China, Back to the Underground. In 2012, Father Mei Daqin, with the approval of the Holy See, was ordained Bishop of Shanghai. During the ordination ceremony, Father Mei avoided the embrace and communion with a Chinese Catholic Patriotic Association bishop who was present at the ordination ceremony. In his homily, Bishop Mei announced that he would henceforth devote himself fully to his pastoral mission and consequently quit the Patriotic Association. Immediately after his ordination, Bishop Mei was placed under house arrest at Xishai Regional Seminary, and he's still under this house arrest. He's been forbidden to wear any episcopal insignia. He's been forbidden to wear his pectoral cross, his ring. His title as bishop has been revoked by the Chinese authorities' so-called bishops' conference, which has never been recognized by the Holy See. These points are just a few of the many examples of the harsh and ongoing religious persecution of the underground Catholic Church. In view of this, the religious persecution of the Roman Catholic Church in China is obviously not ancient history. The persecution continues, gets worse and bolder at a time when China was welcomed into the World Trade Organization, as at a time when China has been welcomed into being an important member of the international community, given most favored nation trading status, being hosts of the Olympic Games, which represent the spirit of peace, supposedly. The U.S. State Department has named China a country of particular concern for, I quote, its systematic, ongoing, and egregious violations of religious freedom. Pope Benedict XVI wrote a letter to China in 2007, in which he said, "It must not be forgotten that many bishops have undergone persecution and have been impeded in the exercise of their ministry, and some of them have made the church fruitful with the shedding of their blood." Pope Benedict went on to say that there must be authentic religious freedom in China, and that the Holy See desires to be completely free to appoint bishops. He added that it is indispensable that when legitimation of the once illegitimate Catholic Patriotic Association bishops has occurred, it is brought into the public domain at the earliest opportunity, and that the legitimized bishops provide unequivocal and increasing signs of full communion with the Pope. Pope Benedict did say that there was a need to purify our memories, to pardon the wrongdoers, to forget the injustices suffered, and to restore the troubled hearts to serenity in order to grow and to make visible the bonds of communion between the faithful and the pastors of the church in China. Every bishop should be in communion with the other bishops, and that all should be in visible and concrete communion. It has come time in this program to talk about Cardinal Kung, because he's a key figure in all of this. In his Mission magazine in 1957, Bishop Fulton Sheen wrote, "The West has its Menzetti, but the East has its Kung." God is glorified in his saints. The story of Cardinal Kung is the story of a faithful shepherd and of a hero. Cardinal Kung was a man who refused to renounce God and his church despite the consequences of a life sentence from the Chinese communist governments. No account of religious persecution or of any human rights violations in China is complete without a few words about His Eminence, Cardinal Kung. He had been Bishop of Shanghai and administrator of two other dioceses for only 5 years before he was arrested by the Chinese government. In just 5 short years, Bishop Kung became one of the most feared enemies of the Chinese communists, a man who commanded both the attention and devotion of the country, at that time 3 million Roman Catholics, and the highest respect of his brother bishops in China, and inspired thousands to offer their lives up to God, in spite of the communist-created and sanctioned Chinese Catholic Patriotic Association. Bishop Kung personally supervised the Legion of Mary, a religious organization of the laity dedicated to the veneration of the Blessed Mother Mary. As a result, many members of the Legion of Mary chose to risk arrest in the name of their God, of their church, and of their bishops. Hundreds were arrested and sentenced to 10, 15, or 20 years or more of hard labor. In the midst of these persecutions, Bishop Kung declared the Marian Year in Shanghai, 1952. During that year, there was to be uninterrupted 24-hour daily recitations of the Rosary in front of a statue of Our Lady of Fatima, which toured all the parishes of Shanghai. The holy statue finally arrived at Christ the King Church, where a major arrest of the priests had just taken place only a month before. Bishop Kung visited that church and personally led the rosary, while hundreds of the armed police looked on. At the end of the rosary, leading the congregation, Bishop Kung prayed, "Holy Mother, we do not ask you for a miracle. We do not beg you to stop the persecutions, but we do beg you to support us, for we are very weak." Knowing that he and his priests would soon be arrested, Bishop Kung trained hundreds of catechists to pass on the Roman Catholic faith in the diocese. The heroic effort of these catechists, their martyrdom, and that of many of the faithful and the clergy contributed to the vibrant underground Roman Catholic Church in China today. On September 8, 1955, press around the world reported in shock the overnight arrests of Bishop Kung, along with more than 200 priests and leaders in Shanghai. Months after his arrest, he was taken out to a mob struggle session in the old dog racing stadium in Shanghai. Thousands were ordered to attend and to hear the bishop's public confession of his crimes. With his hands tied behind his back, wearing a Chinese pajama suit, the 5-foot-tall bishop was pushed forward to the microphone to confess. To the shock of the security police, they heard the bishop cry out, "Long live Christ the King! Long live the Pope!" The crowd responded immediately, "Long live Christ the King! Long live Bishop Kung!" Bishop Kung was quickly dragged away to the police car and disappeared from the world until he was brought to trial years later, 1960. 5 years later, 1960. Bishop Kung was sentenced to life in prison. The night before he was brought to trial, the chief prosecutor asked once again for his cooperation to lead the independent church movement and to establish the Chinese Patriotic Association. His answer was, "I'm a Roman Catholic bishop. If I denounce the Holy Father, not only would I not be a bishop, I would not even be a Catholic. You can cut off my head, but you can never take away my duties." Bishop Kung vanished behind bars for 30 years. During those 30 years, he spent many long periods in isolation. Numerous requests to visit Bishop Kung in prison by international religious and human rights organizations and senior foreign government officials were rejected. He was not permitted to receive visitors, including his relatives, letters, or money to buy essentials, which are the rights of other prisoners. The efforts for his release by his family, led by his nephew, Joseph Kung, by human rights organizations, including Amnesty International, the Red Cross, and the United States, never ceased.
And I want to note that the CardinalKungFoundation.org is a website that every Catholic ought to look at. You ought to look at every menu and submenu and look at the articles, look at the testimonials to get a picture of what's really going on in China. Because so few in this country are likely to tell the truth, to set the record straight. So Cardinal Kung, after decades in prison, finally, in 1985, he was released to jail to serve another term of 10 years of house arrest under the custody of those Patriotic Association bishops who had betrayed him and betrayed the Pope and who usurped his diocese. The New York Times reported that the ambiguous wording of the Chinese news agency suggested that the authorities, not the bishop, might have relented. After 2.5 years of house arrest, he was officially released. However, his charge of being a counter-revolutionary was never exonerated. In 1988, his nephew went to China twice and obtained permission to escort him to America for receiving proper medical care. Shortly before Bishop Kung was released from jail, he was permitted to join a banquet organized by the Shanghai government to welcome His Eminence, Cardinal Jaime Sin, Archbishop of Manila, Philippines, on a friendship visit. This was the first time the bishop had met a visiting bishop from the Universal Church since his imprisonment. Cardinal Sin and Bishop Kung were seated on opposite ends of the table, separated by more than 20 communists, and had no chance to exchange words privately. During the dinner, Cardinal Sin suggested that each person should sing a song to celebrate. When the time came for Bishop Kung to sing, in the presence of the Chinese government officials and the Patriotic Association bishops, he looked directly at Cardinal Sin and sang, "Tu es Petrus es superanc Petram edificabo ecclesiam." You are Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church. A song of faith proclaiming the supreme authority of the Pope. Bishop Kung conveyed to Cardinal Sin that in all his years of captivity, he remained faithful to God, to his church, and the Pope. After the banquet, Aloysius Jin, the Chinese Catholic Patriotic Association Bishop of Shanghai, rebuked Cardinal Kung. "What are you trying to do, showing your position?" Cardinal Kung quietly answered, "It is not necessary to show my position. My position has never changed." Cardinal Sin immediately carried Cardinal Kung's message to the Holy Father and announced to the world, "This man of God never faltered in his love for his church or his people, despite unimaginable suffering, isolation, and pain." Bishop Walter Curtis, the Roman Catholic Bishop of Bridgeport, Connecticut, invited Bishop Kung to stay with the retired clergy of the Bridgeport Diocese upon his arrival in the United States. He remained the guest of the diocese for 9 years until September 1997, when St. Pope John Paul II presented Cardinal Kung with his red hat in the Consistory in 1991 in the Vatican. The 90-year-old bishop raised himself up from the wheelchair, put aside his cane, and walked up the steps to kneel at the foot of the pontiff. Visibly touched, the Holy Father lifted him up, gave him his cardinal's hat, then stood patiently as Cardinal Kung returned to his wheelchair to the sounds of an unprecedented 7-minute standing ovation from 9,000 guests in the audience hall in the Vatican. When China's chairman, Jiang Zemin, visited the United States, it was 1997, Cardinal Kung appealed to him. He said this, "I respectfully appeal to you, Mr. Chairman, to defend the rights of the Chinese citizen to true religious freedom and to permit the Roman Catholics to maintain true religious freedom and to permit the Roman Catholics to retain religious communion with the Pope in order to keep the fullness of their faith. May China, under your able leadership, be internationally known as a country which has true religious freedom." Of course, the appeal met only the deaf ear of the chairman. Cardinal Kung also pled for the release of Catholics held in China's jail and slave labor camps. His Eminence, Ignatius Cardinal Kung Pin Mei, died on March 12th, year 2000. He was 98 years of age.
There's stories of other bishops who suffered as much, and they're worth telling. But we have only little time. Let's talk about a priest. How about Father Lu? Father Joseph Lu Genjun. He was the administrative leader of the Roman Catholic Church of the Diocese of Baoding. In 2006, Father Lu was to meet a fellow underground Roman Catholic priest at the Baoding train station. Before arriving there, he was intercepted by several public security officials. They dragged him to the police station. He was never seen again. He was 44 years old, son of a farmer. After Haskell, he joined the Communist Army. At night, he had a secret life. He secretly listened to Bible readings on radio stations and news on the Voice of America. After serving in the Army, he literally ran to the underground seminary. In May of 89, he was ordained a priest. The next year, he was arrested shortly after his ordination. He was there for 1 month. He was beaten, handcuffed for 24 hours a day for many days. His head and face were hit so hard that his lower jaw was seriously injured and his teeth loosened, making chewing food impossible for a long time. Father Lu was arrested again 4 years later, 1994, and released after a short period of detention. In April of 98, he was arrested again and released after a short period of time. In 2001, he was arrested again. But this time it was different. He was almost immediately sentenced to 3 years in a labor camp. The court documents stated that Father Lu was guilty of 1, receiving theology training in 86, 2, being ordained a priest, 3, a priesthood that is not recognized by the Patriotic Association, 4, his refusal to recognize and to follow the directives of the Patriotic Association, 5, conducting illegal evangelization activities, causing social disturbance, and 6, conducting illegal evangelization that created a comparatively big impact. This document is extremely significant. The court document is a de facto admission by the Chinese government of its religious persecution policy. It clearly proved that Article 36 of the Chinese Constitution guaranteeing freedom of religious belief does not mean freedom of religion. Otherwise, how could the Chinese government put Father Lu in the labor camp for 3 years for the so-called crimes as described in this document? 3 years later, Father Lu was released, but the arrest soon began again. 2 months later, while I was preparing to give talks for local Catholic young married couples on Catholic moral theology and natural family planning, the police arrived and took him away. He was locked up for a few days. He was arrested again on his way to the train station 2 years later. This time, as I said before, he was never seen again. No one has any news of him, his family or anybody. Priests, seminarians, nuns, or laypersons face similar harassment. We know for sure there are approximately 25 of them in jail or in labor camps. It's not a complete list. It's difficult to obtain such details. Some people who know the situation estimate that there are hundreds in jail. Sometimes the government simply removes a priest or a bishop and do not place them in the jail system, so there's no official record of this religious prisoner. This is one more new method of persecuting the underground church. Let's finish with a homily by Cardinal Kung, delivered in 1988 at the Queen of Clergy Chapel in Stamford, Connecticut. I give you just the first paragraphs. My dear brothers and sisters in Christ, today, on Our Lady's birthday feast, we are offering this Mass as a happy prayer of thanksgiving to God on the one hand, and a prayer of earnest petition for his continual grace on the other. 33 years ago today, 30 priests, a large number of brothers and nuns, and hundreds of lay Catholics were rounded up and jailed in the Diocese of Shanghai. This was but the beginning of the Chinese Church of Silence. Since that date, we Catholics have been subjected to every type of persecution. During those long and harrowing years, a large number of religious of both sexes and lay Catholics
fortified by their deep faith, have been carrying their cross courageously. Some of them were in prison. Some were sent to hard labor camps. Some were separated from their loved ones, forced to leave their families and homeland. Some were expelled from school or lost their jobs. Some paid the ultimate price, sacrificing their precious lives. Why did they endure such suffering? They were not fools, but very reasonable people. They bore and are still bearing this suffering patiently, sustained by God's grace and by the unquenchable flame of their ardent faith in His commandments. Oh, my fellow Catholics, preserve that bright flame of faith forever. Forever preserve your honorable privilege as God's adopted children. Never betray your church. Rather, protect and defend her with all your might. You, my brothers and sisters in Christ, who are present at this Mass, have given proof that you have kept your faith and fidelity to the Church. Let us praise and thank God for giving us the grace of such fidelity and courage. This has been Setting the Record Straight with Chuck Coughlin.
Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.